The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Well, it's very nice to be here with you. I was here last week, and some of you were here last week. It's really nice to be back with you. And the first thing I want to do is bow to each of you for coming out to meditate tonight instead of rushing off to Macy's and buying your Christmas presents. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but this is a much nicer thing to do. So, last week I spoke about mindfulness of breathing, or anapanasati meditation. And tonight, which is the first foundation of mindfulness, and tonight I thought that I'd like to talk a little bit about mindfulness of the body, which is the second foundation of the four foundations of mindfulness. And this is something that a lot of people, this is something that's very easy for a lot of people to understand and to get a hit off of it immediately when you start to practice it. But for some reason, people don't get that, and they don't, so they spend, maybe I'm speaking from my own experience, but I personally spent many, many years just totally ignoring my body and finding that I was completely wrapped up in looking at the mind. I was thinking that this was a practice of disciplining the mind, which it certainly is, but I didn't realize that I could enlist the body as an ally in this practice, as a really reliable ally in this practice. And I can recall one particular time, one particular period where my meditations were not really very peaceful. They weren't very, they weren't going the way I wanted them to go or thought they should go. And for some reason, I slipped into my body, and I realized, or I took refuge in my body. I just sort of leaned back and rested. And it began to occur to me that there's actually no experience known to me, or that there was no experience that I had ever had that I didn't know in my body. And it sounds so simplistic, and at the same time, it was such a shocking revelation, because I realized then that there, all I had to do is sort of bring my awareness to the qualitative difference between being in the mind and being focused or centered, bringing the awareness, the focus of the awareness back into the body. And the body will actually root you in the present moment. As long as you're aware of the body, you're in the present moment. As long as you're aware of the breath, you're in the present moment. So it's when we drift off into our thinking processes, which we do all the time, or our emotional states, or this is where we become literally disembodied. And so I began to play with this idea of, or with, maybe it's not an idea, I began to play with what it felt like when my awareness was focused in my mind, which I'm going to point to my head here, to the brain, which is normally what we think of as the mind in the West. And when my attention was centered in my body, and the feeling was absolutely unmistakable. I could completely tell the difference right away. I didn't need anybody to instruct me. I didn't need to read any books about it. It was immediately felt as a direct experience. And so when we begin to do the practice of mindfulness of the body, what we want to look at is what the quality of the felt sense is within the body. And while we were meditating, I was actually experimenting with this a little bit to see what it's like. And for me, because I'm such a mental person, I consciously bring my awareness down below my neck, from my shoulders down, and I actually find that I almost automatically will rest in the chest area, in the heart area. Other people may be down a little bit lower in the belly or wherever. But once I connect with this place, I can have a global sense of the body. So there's this immediate sense of expansion that you can connect with and feel the body as a whole. So it's this kind of sense of being embodied, the feeling of being embodied. And in a way, it feels very safe and it feels very natural. And I would go so far as to say, in my own experience, it feels there's a sense of joy or a sense of there's an actual term for it in Pali. It's called piti. And piti can start off as a feeling of joy and actually escalate into rapture. But, you know, if I chase piti in my mind, it's pretty elusive. It's a moving target. It doesn't happen as easily. But if I simply rest in the heart and just allow the consciousness to fill this felt sense of being embodied, what occurs is that there's this experience of being in the present moment that it's very mysterious. I don't know exactly what causes this to happen, but it's almost effortless. And I really want to point this out to all of you, because the body is so ignored. We so ignore it in our practice, or some of us do. And it can be a real ally. It can tell us what our mind state is. It can tell us what our emotional state is. It can tell us, of course, what our physical state is. And what happens when we practice coming back to the body over and over again, to the feeling, to becoming aware of knowing what that feeling is like, that felt sense is like. When we do that over and over and over again, we begin to cultivate a non-reactive, an ability to meet our life in a non-reactive way. Because sometimes the mind will trigger a response in the body, and the body will give us a shot of adrenaline or something like that, and we're off and running, and we're just reacting because the body has the body has actually signaled us, you see. But to become familiar with the body so that you can know what's happening in the mind allows you to, over time, to cultivate this kind of non-reactive ability to meet all of your life's experiences. So it's not just while you're on the meditation cushion, it's in all of your life. So I've got a number of things here that I want to try to get to tonight that I probably won't. But the first thing I want to do here is I want to read you a little passage from a man named Paul Fleshman. I don't know who this man is. I don't know anything about him, but somehow I got this on the internet and or in my email one day, and it's quite beautiful. So I want to credit him with this, and it leads into this whole business about mindfulness of the body. And this little article that he has written is called "I'm Interested in My Mind." And he says, "I'm interested in my mind and in my body. Previous to my having cultivated the habit of sitting, I had thought about myself and had used my body as a tool in the world, to grip a pen or to chop firewood, but I had never systematically, rigorously observed my body, what it feels like, not just with a shy, fleeting glance, but moment after moment, for hours and days at a time. Nor had I committed myself to observe the reciprocal influence of mind and body in states of exhaustion and rest, hunger, pain, relaxation, arousal, lethargy, or concentration. My quest for knowing is not merely objective and scientific. This body and mind is the vessel of my life. I want to know it with the same organic immersion that sets a snow goose flying 10,000 miles every winter and spring." So this is a very, very provocative passage. At least it seems that way to me. And when he talks about committing himself to observing the reciprocal influence of the body and mind in all these different states, this is exactly what I discovered that day on my meditation cushion in my own home. It was that there was nothing that I experienced in my life to that point that didn't feel familiar in my body. I had just never taken the time to look closely, to be comfortable, to get comfortable with my body. I may have thought that my body was, an obstacle to meditation, an obstacle to going deeply into meditation. This, of course, is a mistake. And as I came to learn. So what I want to say again is that the practice of mindfulness, the kind of practice that we do here at IMC, is really an embodied practice. And to use the body actively and creatively in your meditation is something that I'd like to encourage all of you to do. When the Buddha actually taught mindfulness of body, he of course gave his bhikkhus all sorts of instructions that are some of them seem really out there, far out to us, but in the final analysis, all that we're trying to do is come to bring our awareness, the light of our awareness, back upon the body, and to see that within the body, everything is known already, and access to anything that isn't known will be known through this mind-body experience. So when the Buddha teaches mindfulness of the body, he actually teaches it in a very purposeful way so that we don't confuse it with other practices. And it's very easy to do that because when we experience emotions in the body, we can experience those emotions as a felt sense in the body, but it's easy to confuse the knowing of emotions with the knowing of mindfulness of the body. So the purpose of determining the object of of contemplation is so that it can be isolated from other objects. And this may sound a little bit far out, but this is in fact what the Buddha taught to his bhikkhus. He says, thus in the practice of mindfulness of the body should be contemplated as such and not as one's feelings or ideas or emotions concerning the body. This is really important. It also means that the body should be contemplated simply as a body and not as a man or not as a woman or not as a self or not even as a living being, simply as a body. So when he teaches this, he teaches 14 different kinds of exercises. And these exercises include mindfulness of breathing, which we talked about last week. You know the breath within the body. Contemplation of the four postures, sitting, standing, walking, lying down. Full awareness, attention to foulness, attention to the elements, and the nine charnel ground contemplations, which are reflections on corpses in different states of decomposition. Now, these practices were given to his monastics, and they're way too far out for most lay people here in the West, and it's not really important that we know about them in terms of the charnel ground contemplations or even the repulsiveness contemplations. The point of those instructions were to help the monks break their attachment to the physical being and to the wrong ideas about materiality and mentality. So what I want to talk about a little bit here, which is right now, is the four. When he talks about mindfulness of the body using the four great elements, because this is a practice that is frequently taught in the West, and it's a very useful practice because it brings people to a state of if they want to pursue a concentration practice or a deep samadhi practice, it brings people into a state of what's called access concentration, where one begins to feel the effects of the calmness and the tranquilizing effects of ever deepening concentration. Or it brings people to the doorway of doing vipassana. So it's a practice that roots us in the body and helps us to see into the nature of materiality. And so what the Buddha teaches is that that all things, but for the purposes of this talk, that our body is composed of four elements, which are earth, fire, or earth, water, fire, and wind. And these elements, we scan the body repeatedly over and over and over again to identify these four elements so that at a certain point we actually aren't so much connecting with our body as a body in the normal conventional way, but we're beginning to see it as being made up of these four elements. And the way that as Maureen mentioned, I had been a monk in Burma, and the way that my teacher taught this to the monks in his monastery was that rather than to simply try to identify these four elements, what we were instructed to do was to to learn that there are 12 characteristics associated with these four elements. And the characteristics of of earth, there were six characteristics of earth, and then two each for the other three elements. So I'm going to tell you what these characteristics are. The earth element is recognized by the qualities of hardness, like your skull, your bones, your teeth, hardness, roughness. If you run your tongue over your teeth, you'll feel the roughness of the tooth. Or if you rub your hand on your clothes, you'll feel that this is roughness and heaviness. And all you have to do is drop your head and you can feel the heaviness of the... So those are the first three characteristics. And then the opposites of them are softness. Just push your tongue against the inside of your cheek and you'll recognize this softness. Your eye, your earlobe, soft. Smoothness, again, over your lip or over the inside of your cheek, and lightness. And lightness can be the feeling of the movement of picking your foot. I had a hard time discovering it, and I discovered it in walking meditation. The feeling of the foot rising as it's taking a step, or I recognize it when I see myself or notice other people blinking, just the softness of the eyelashes moving up and down. And you can begin to feel this softness or this lightness. It's a sense of lightness that you get. So the six characteristics are hardness, roughness, hardness, heaviness, roughness, softness, smoothness, lightness. Those are the characteristics of the earth element. And the characteristics of the water element are flowing and cohesion. So what we would be pointing to would be the blood flowing in our circulatory system. And the quality of cohesion is that quality that holds the blood together so that it doesn't spatter just all over the place as random molecules. Or the flowing could be like mucus. It could be like saliva. And it's that quality that holds it together, which is cohesion. Cohesion is probably the hardest characteristic to identify when you actually start to do this practice. The fire element is quite easy. It's basically temperature, heat, and cold, and all the variations in between. And then the wind element is pushing and supporting. And so supporting is if you just lean over and then you straighten your spine. This quality of support is what's meant as this characteristic. And when you begin to do this practice, the instruction is to start... you can do it in many different ways. The Buddha, actually, when he gave this instruction, said to start with pushing, because it's the easiest of the characteristics to identify. So you feel the movement of breath is pushing, and so you can identify that quite quickly and quite easily. And here's where it becomes a little bit more dicey, because you're instructed to basically feel this movement of pushing, this movement. Now, I want to say pushing is any movement at all. So it could be the movement of the blood through the blood vessels, through the heart. It could be the movement of nerve impulses in the nervous system. It could be actual movement. Hopefully I won't spill the water here. But you're taught to recognize movement to begin in the head and to feel to actually feel the movement, to bring your attention into the center of the brain, so to speak, into the center of the skull. And then you simply begin to, you rest, and then you begin to feel the movement in the center of your mind. Now, if in the center of your skull. If this is difficult, just ignore it and go to some place that's easy to find the movement. And so it could be something like opening and closing your eyes. It's just movement. It could be something like, you know, running your tongue over your lips. Movement. You see? It could be noticing the body, the breath in the body. This is a very easy one for me because it brings me right back to this mindfulness of the body where my consciousness or my awareness centers in sort of my heart center. And I can feel myself breathe there. And so what I'm beginning to feel are all the different sensations as the breath moves in and out of the body. And so one can begin to get this sense of movement. And it, in this sense, I hope I'm giving you a taste of it, because what happens is it just begins to expand, and pretty soon you can feel, you begin almost by imagining, but at a certain point it's almost like you can feel the heart pumping and the lungs breathing and the nerve impulses shooting and the messages that are being sent all over the body. And pretty soon the experience of the body is incredibly vibrant and palpable. So the instruction is to take one characteristic. In this case, the Buddha says that movement is the very easiest to start with. I, of course, didn't take his advice. I just went right down the list: hardness, roughness, heaviness. So I took the element of the earth, and then I began to work with hardness first. And so it happened really quite by accident. It happened when I was doing walking meditation. I was just walking along, doing my walking meditation, and all of a sudden I just realized that as I put my foot down, I was experiencing hardness. I was experiencing it in the felt sense of contact, both the hardness of the floor I was walking on and the hardness of my foot or my skeleton touching the floor. And then this just set up, it began to cascade, because then I saw that all of the other elements and all of the other characteristics were also present in almost that very step. And see, this is the magic of this meditation, because it just draws you in and rivets you. Because once you begin to see it, you begin to recognize all of these different things being present in all parts of the body. You see? Now, admittedly, there are some parts of the body, and so you're taught to scan the body and to recognize, to begin to identify these characteristics, first one at a time. And then you add another one, and then you add another one, and then you add another one. And then if you get, you know, if it gets foggy again, you go back and you start again. There's no real rush to do any of this. But the idea of bringing the mind exclusively to this quality of elements within the body is a very, very powerful way, a very powerful meditation instruction. And if you can apply it, I think that you would agree. I think you will agree. I encourage you to give it a shot, because it's how do I want to describe it, or describe my own experience? I was really shocked, because I was so mental, and I've been so mental all my life, and I brought that quality to my meditation. And when I began to connect with how to connect with the body, things just shifted dramatically and very, very quickly. So some of the more esoteric types of meditation that I was taught in Burma that seemed absolutely off the charts, and that no one would ever be able to do such a thing, just became, they just came very easily. So it's almost like before you know how to ride a bicycle, the idea of knowing how to balance on a bicycle seems impossible. But once you know how to ride a bicycle, it's totally effortless. So these four elements are enormously useful techniques to use. And was it a Sati Center or an IMC? Somebody came and did a whole day on the four elements and how to do four element meditation. So this is, I'm giving it to you very, very quickly. But essentially, we are recognizing that these bodies are not male, they're not female, there's no self in them, there's no living being. What we're trying to do is basically see that this is an expression of materiality. And when the meditation gets a little bit deeper, we begin to see that the body isn't even as compact as we take it to be. And, you know, all we have to do is look under a microscope to know that science has proved this. But you can begin to actually get a flavor and a taste of it in your own meditative experience. So one of the other meditation instructions for mindfulness of the body is to recognize the body, the bodily parts. And this meditation is called the 32 parts of the body. this is a little bit weirder for us to go with, but it is a classic meditation. So I'll tell you what the 32 parts of the body are that the monks are taught to look for. And you identify them within your own body, and then you actually begin to be able to like see the parts of the body in other people. You can look internally and externally. So and this is part of the instruction. And so when you're doing, and this is a foulness meditation, so the idea is it's to break our attachment to our bodies and to our ideas about about our bodies. So the meditator reviews the body from the top to the bottom and the bottom to the top, and they do this over and over and over again, and they begin to recognize. When I ordained, they gave this meditation to me where you do head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, and skin, and you to repeat this over and over and over again and contemplate on head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, and skin to see that this is not me, this is not I, this is not myself. This is just head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, and skin. So that's the beginning. Nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, large intestines, small intestines, contents of the stomach, feces, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, and urine. And so as we do this four-element meditation, as we did this four-element meditation, identifying these characteristics within our body as we scan our body, we do the 32 parts of the body meditation in the very same way. So you begin head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin, and you begin to go through the body, the 32 parts of the body as they identified back 2,500 years ago. There's many more parts, but this is what they pointed to. And at a certain point, the meditator actually begins to see in their mind's eye the parts of this body. And, you know, you begin to see head hair, nails, teeth, skin, body hair, etc. Lungs, large intestines, contents of the intestines, yuck, and so on and so forth. And oddly, the taking the repulsive nature of the body can lead in a meditation to a state of real happiness and joy. Don't ask me how it happens, but this is a classic instruction. So I don't really want to go into this foulness thing because most Westerners are turned off by it, but I do just want to mention that this is a classic way of practicing mindfulness of the body. So, and then there are the nine charnel ground contemplations, and that's basically just exactly what you think it might be. But the purpose of this, and this comes right out of the suttas here, I want to just close this section with it. The Buddha says that the meditator abides contemplating in the body its arising factors, or he abides contemplating in the body its vanishing factors, or both its arising and its vanishing factors. So what we come to in order to approach insight is that we review the body with its impermanent nature. So we're looking at the body as things arise, as they have their life, and as they pass away. So he says, or else mindfulness simply that mindfulness that there is a body is simply established in him or the meditator to the extent that it's necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness. And that's the point that I want to emphasize for all of us, because nobody in this room is a monk that I can tell, or a nun. And sometimes it's just enough to establish mindfulness that there is this body, period. That's all. Really, that's all we have to do. And when we do that, we can use these techniques to come to that place. But when we do that, we can come into this sense of embodiment in this very present moment. And that is that's a very beautiful experience. It's a very beautiful direct experience that's available to all of us at any time we're willing to look, to take the time to look. It's there. So I want to encourage all of you to make friends with your body and to recognize that if you're having trouble developing mindfulness of breathing, for instance, sometimes that comes very easily for some people, and for other people it doesn't come so easily at all. But if you're getting pulled off of your meditation object repeatedly and just are having a dickens of a time being with it, you can always take refuge in your own body. And each of you will find the way that you know that you're there. But play around with the qualitative differences between experiencing thoughts or thinking, experiencing emotions, and literally experiencing the felt sense of the being embodied in the body. You see? Because this embodiment practice is a doorway to deep insight when it's cultivated and developed. So I think that's about as much as I want to say about this tonight, and there's a little bit of time left. There's a few minutes left here, and if anybody has any questions about anything I said tonight or anything I said last week or any general practice question that you would like to ask, I'd be more than happy to try to answer. Yes, hi. You're going to have to speak up a little. I can hear.
I was a little confused by taking refuge in the body and how these practices would support that. They all seem so analytical in terms of separating and taking refuge in these 32 factors or even in the elements. I'm not sure how to put that together.
I wasn't suggesting to take refuge in the 32 parts of the body or in the elements, but to use those, if they're useful, to actually come into this experience of the body, to knowing what it's like to be in the body and not in the mind. And these are meditation techniques and systems that bring people deeper and deeper into that experience, or can bring you deeper and deeper into that experience. And in my own experience, I found, because I've done both of those practices, and I found that the practice of four-element meditation made the experience of the body, of being in the body, incredibly sharp and bright and profound. But it wasn't, I'm not suggesting that it's the elements or the characteristics of the elements that did it. It's sort of like what happens when we use the breath as a meditation object. We oftentimes can begin to feel a tranquilizing effect or a calming effect or peaceful or stillness, you see. So it's not the breath that's the stillness and the peace. It's what brings us to this place. And in the same way, you just use these if they're useful. Now, what I started this talk off by saying was that I discovered in my own meditation corner in my own house what it felt like to drop into my body. And I did it because my mind was so completely out of control. I just was completely restless and I couldn't settle down at all. And when I did, I began to explore it a little bit. And then I discovered that everything that I was experiencing seemed very familiar. It was like I knew everything somehow. But it wasn't like knowing intellectually, it was just like a knowing. It was when I allowed the awareness to rest in my body, I could rest in this awareness that knows. So I had a direct hit of what it's like to be mindful, to experience sati. So that's what I was pointing to. And that's what all of these different meditations are simply to bring you into this place. Did that answer your question?
It spawns others, but let me give other people a chance.
Okay. Any other questions by anyone? About anything, it doesn't have to be about this. Yes.
Question I have is, with the mindfulness of the body practice, is it sort of like you're basically substituting the object of attention?
If you're doing what?
Substituting the object of attention instead of the breath. Mm-hmm. You're focusing on different other objects. And it's the focus on the object that is calming the mind to get further into deeper concentration. Not to discount the specific knowings of mm-hmm. hardness, softness, etc.
Right.
But is that what the function is, or is it causing that concentration? That again, it's a focus on an object that's allowing a knowing and concentration.
I'm not sure that I can authoritatively answer that question, but I can tell you from my own experience that I think that by bringing the awareness into the body and into the felt sense of the moment-to-moment experience of the body, that the meditator begins to create the conditions whereby concentration or calmness or insight can begin to arise. But, you know, when you give meditation instructions, especially for people who are new to meditation, one of the things that teachers often will do is they'll do a body scan. If they're doing like a guided meditation, they'll say, now start at the top of your head, and if you feel any tension in your body, and you go through the body and you do this relaxation, and it's this sense of just letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go. And many people will report, I certainly could report, that during this body scan, the mind will wander off, and then, oh yes, now I'm in my arm, and oh yes, now I'm in my leg, and the mind wanders off. And so what you begin to notice is that if you can stay with the scan, if you can stay in the body, you're really there. You're really there from moment to moment to moment to moment to moment. And it's the cultivation, the gradual cultivation of continuity of attention that builds mindfulness. And it also builds what's called momentary concentration. And it's a powerful kind of concentration, but it doesn't necessarily lead to absorption, but it's a very powerful kind of meditation. And the moment the mind wanders off of the object, which is the body, you know, this is what I was referring to when I said notice the qualitative difference of when you're thinking or feeling emotions and when you're in the body. I mean, it's so physical that you really just can't miss it. It's just that most of the time we don't look at it, or we don't look for it. So,
and another question, is there a book you would recommend specifically for mindfulness of the body?
For mindfulness of the body? Well,
a modern interpretation.
Yeah. Well, of course, you can use
modern interpretation. I guess that is a modern interpretation, but
oh, I see a modern interpretation. I haven't used a book that has a modern interpretation of it. I know that when Gil teaches his introductory course, or when we teach the online course, one of the weeks is devoted to mindfulness of the body. And so there's different ways of, and when we do that, we don't at all talk about the things that I talked about tonight. And the reason that I talked about them tonight is because we don't normally talk about them, and this is where the practice comes from. I mean, this is what it's rooted in. And simply because of my monastic training, I would turn back to that and remind people that this is where the practice came from. But the application of the practice to our own meditation experiences and to our own meditation practice, as well as to our life in general, is we don't have to know all of these characteristics and all of the elements and the 32 parts of the body and all of the different weird meditation things.
Well, it's not too much. I mean, it's not encyclopedic, but it's what I'm intrigued is that it offers like a pedagogy for mindfulness of the body. Yeah, you get that anyway in the intro courses, etc., but it's never prescribed in, now check it out this way. Feel the softness, feel hardness in that sort
of... Right. Well, there are a number of books that give you some of these techniques. A couple of friends of mine just wrote this book called Practicing the Jhanas, and the authors are Stephen Snyder and Tina Rasmussen, and they describe the four-element meditation as it was taught to them by Pauok Sayadaw. And I use the Sayadaw's book, Knowing and Seeing. Some of you may be familiar with it. It's very dense reading. It's not light meaning, and I wouldn't suggest it, but it's very good if you want very technical, systematic instructions on the thing. And of course, to go back to the Satipatthana Sutta, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, you'll get a very clear description of what mindfulness of the body actually is. But having said all of that, I want to just remind everyone once again that I discovered this not by reading or not by having my teacher teach me four-element meditation. I discovered this on my own, and what I discovered was access to an immediate connection with the present moment if I was just willing to take the time to turn within and actually begin to, first of all, I imagine what actually the feeling is. And then the feeling begins to actually arise. And then the feeling turns into a very, it turns into a very direct experience of being in a way. Yes?
I'm wondering if this is due to the objects of meditation, of focusing, of being mindful, or it's due to the mindfulness itself. In other words, could I look at that cushion you have there and focus on it and ask myself, what is it that I'm feeling? What is it that I am seeing? What experiences am I having? Would that be any difference than doing anything else?
No.
In other words, in my mind, I can't distinguish, and I don't know if anyone can distinguish, between the objects of meditation and the meditation itself, the objects of mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Or is it just the mindfulness? It seems to me that perhaps there's no end to how deeply you can go and have the experiences that you're mentioned with anything.
Well, that may very well be true. I would just tell you from the perspective of a meditation instruction, I don't know if knowing the answer to that particular question is really important, as long as you're able to do what you said when you said, if I look at the cushion. Now, normally this is done with our eyes closed. It's easier to get a felt sense, but it's what's triggered within the body by contact, whether it's eye contact or, tactile contact or sound contact. And as you begin to practice meditation more deeply, maybe, then all of those things begin to come into play. It's just like when you do four element meditation, you begin to recognize the characteristics, and then all of the characteristics arising at once, everything becomes more alive, almost luminous. It can become that way. And it doesn't have to be bells and whistles. It can just simply be this feeling of being embodied, being present with the feeling that you're experiencing. So yes, what you're suggesting is very, it's very accurate, and that's all you really have to do. You don't have to practice four element meditation or any of these other more esoteric practices. Those practices are simply to bring us to that place.
The other thing I want to ask you, where does imagination fit into this? Because when we think we see into the brain, and then you say, oh, we can actually do this, mm-hmm. this is imagination. Otherwise, I don't know what is meant by seeing into these things.
Yeah.
How does that, isn't that of the mind?
So that's a very good question. And from my own experience, I don't know the answer, but I'll answer it from my own experience. I think it begins with imagination, and it may actually lead to being able to see things that we didn't think we could see before. So I'm reticent to say this, but this is a perfect lead-in from your question. There's when you do the charnel gong meditation or even the 32 parts of the body meditation, at a certain point, when you begin to notice bones, you may begin to see skeleton. And in the beginning, for me, the skeleton came very quickly. I saw the skeleton very, very fast. And then I went to my teacher and I said, I'm not sure that I'm really seeing a skeleton or if I'm just imagining the skeleton. And he said, did you see it? And I said, yes. And he said, well, then stop doubting. Just go with it. And, what happened was that it just became more and more present. I could see all the parts of the skeleton. I could see my skeleton. I could see skeletons all over the room. This is a very specific meditation, but it is mindfulness of the body. So whether I was actually seeing skeletons or whether I was imagining skeletons, I can't tell you, but it may have begun with imagination. You see, you can imagine your heart, right? You can imagine what your heart looks like and feels like pumping. Maybe you can't. I could do that. That was another thing that I could do really easily. I also could. I have a little bit of a problem with my GI tract, and so when it came to doing intestines and that, it was like it came up right away. I could get it right away. So, but again, all you have to do, really what I'm pointing to for the purposes of mindfulness of the body, is simply to know what the felt sense is within the body of any experience that comes along. So there will be thinking, but then there will be the felt sense of thinking in the body. You'll know what it's like to feel thinking. You'll know what it's like to feel emotions. You'll know what it's like to just be in the body. And that's what we're talking about. And when you're embodied, then you're not subject to being buffeted around, because your awareness is more continuously mindful, or resting in mindfulness. So it's now a few minutes past 9:00, and I think that we have to close. So Thank you all for coming, and I want to say that whenever people come together to meditate and practice the Dhamma, this is a cause of the arising of merit for all of us that have come here, and it benefits all other beings everywhere. So I bow to all of you for coming to practice the Dhamma tonight, and may you all be well, and may you all be happy, and I wish you happy holidays and a very happy New Year. Thank you.